Welcome to the Ketones and Coffee Podcast with Lawrence Munaig, where we explore the ketogenic lifestyle and how it can improve your physical and mental health. Each week, we bring you valuable insights and advice from experts to help you on your journey to a healthier lifestyle. This episode is brought to you by BasicKetogenicLifestyle.com, where Lawrence coaches individuals with depression to reverse their symptoms and achieve a healthier, happier life using an evidence-based approach. So sit back, relax, and join us as we dive deep into the world of ketones and coffee. Subscribe to the Ketones and Coffee Podcast today and never miss an episode.
I'm so excited for this. Stick around. Today we have Dr. Tro joining us on the show. Dr. Tro is a board certified internal medicine and obesity medicine physician. He is the medical director and founder of Dr. Tro's Medical Weight Loss and Direct Primary Care in Tappan, New York. His therapeutic focus spans critical health areas such as diabetes, obesity, hypertension, hyperlipidemia, metabolic syndrome, and PCOS. But what sets him apart is not just his extensive medical knowledge, but a deeply personal journey. He himself has shed an incredible 150 pounds on a ketogenic diet, and his approach to patient care is not just rooted in science, but in the practicalities of real-life challenges. I'm so excited for this. I'm here with Dr. Tro. Dr. Tro, welcome to the show.
Hey, Lawrence, thanks for having me.
Dr. Tro, it's really an honor to have you, man. I also had a couple of your team on the show, and their stories have been incredible. So I've been waiting for this moment to just have this conversation with you, brother.
Yeah, I mean, look, what can I say? If people don't know about me, I'm happy to talk a little bit about it. But I think you hit the nail on the head. I have an amazing team. Me is just part of the story. I work with a team of 13 people, and each one of them are amazing. Brian Wiley, one of our lead health coaches, has lost 100 pounds, kept it off for nearly a decade and a half. Amazing. He's truly an Atkins OG. Amy Igas, who you had on your show,
is
our program director. She lost 220 pounds and she's kept it off now for 5-6 years. And we have Dr. Laura Buchanan, and she's seen the impact of metabolic health. She's changed her whole career to sort of focus on metabolic health. And she's just amazing. And we got Vic, who's our health coach. She's lost 100 pounds, kept it off now 6 years, doing exercise. I mean, it's just Mary Duganzik's our PA. Oh, she wrote a paper with me on keto and Cushing's. Just Cushing's disease. It's a medical condition. We just have an awesome, awesome team. Yeah. And the work we do, we work with large companies who want to get their employees healthy, and they hire our team to go in and make their help inspire their company to focus on metabolic health. I have the best job in the world, literally the best job in the world.
You're doing God's work there, brother. So before we dive into the intricacies of your expertise, I'd love to explore the source of your passion, man, and what you do, right? It's all about that. You have this incredible energy and commitment. Could you share with us where that passion comes from, right? And what ignited that spark that led you to this path today?
It depends on how far you want to go back. When I was 13, I was the same weight I am now. And I stepped on a scale in my primary care office on my 13th birthday. And after waiting for about an hour and a half to be seen. And I remember sitting there in the waiting room thinking, like, why the hell am I waiting this long? And he got me on the scale and he looked at me and he said, you're just going to be like your whole family. You're fat. And he's like, you got to lose weight. And I remember my gut instinct was a little bit of shame, a little bit of guilt. I remember turning red in the face. And I remember at that point, I wanted to be a doctor because I was like, this fucking shithead, okay, just told me to lose weight. He's got a TV in the freaking waiting room. He made me wait 2 hours sitting on my ass. Excuse my language. Sorry. And he could have put a bike out in the waiting room for me, at least, or something, a treadmill. Oh, he wants me to lose weight. He told me I got to go lose weight. I have to eat less, count my calories, and move more and exercise. I was like, why do you have me sit on my ass for 2 hours? So that was my moment where I knew I wanted to become a doctor. Because Dr. Atis inspired me. Dr. Atis showed me what not to do. Mm-hmm. Don't shame and blame. Don't be lazy as a doctor. Don't be uninspiring as a doctor. So I went off and I went to med school and residency. I gained weight. Couldn't, even though I wanted to prove Dr. Atis wrong, I had gained weight 10 pounds per year. And I got up to 350 pounds. And my wife at the time, my loving wife, she was worried about my overall health. And she wondered if I would have a heart attack. And she was right to worry. And so my wife really prompted me to think things through a bit, right? And think, and she's, I was the chief resident. She's like, you're the chief resident. She's like, you told the program directors in the Yale system that, you know, what was going to happen with hepatitis C and what was going to happen in certain other fields. Like, she's like, can't you figure out obesity? And so she really challenged me in my mind to academically understand obesity. And so I academically understood obesity. I went to literature, read studies, read books, read 300 books, all the three textbooks on obesity. And then you see the truth. So when you do that, you see like the whole picture and that our nutrition guidelines are built on a house of cards and they're essentially all lies. And that's where I started. So I went like fundamentally, I was like, okay, what diet should I do? Well, what works best? Mm-hmm. And you go into the literature and you see that low carb always did better. Mm-hmm. So I didn't start with low carb because I wanted to, I really had never cooked a steak in until after that point, which was like 8 or 9 years ago. Mm-hmm. I had no affinity for meat or anything like that. But I just wanted the best approach, and that was low carb. So that's that's was a big turning point when I started to fix my own health, and I started to take all that rage from my childhood that inspired me to go into medicine. And that was sort of the tipping point, I guess, of everything coming together.
Man, thank you for telling that story. It just gives a lot of people some perspective there. We got a lot to discuss, Dr. Cho, because I'm glad just to have somebody with that credentials that you have and that combined own experience gives you that unique perspective, right, in terms of weight loss and health in general. It's such a great opportunity for us to debunk, right, some of these age-old beliefs that, frankly, are hindering a lot of individuals, my close family included, adapting this low carb lifestyle. So maybe we can help people transition here from our
discussion. Yeah, I mean, well, so that's the thing. So the I'll tell you in terms of like credentials. I'm a board certified internal medicine doctor. I'm a board certified obesity medicine doctor. I'm a medical health practitioner, metabolic health practitioner. I have a certification in personal training. I have certification as a health coach. I don't think, and I've lost 150 pounds myself. My patients lose on average more than 45 pounds over a year in our program. I don't think there's many people out there more qualified than me. And I'm not saying that, like, I'd say there's less than 1,000 people more qualified to talk about this than me. And not as I'm not like, not to toot my horn, but I don't think I can get more credential.
Hey guys, let me tell you about this delivery service that's been a total game changer for my lifestyle. Did you know that it's now possible to get local, fresh groceries delivered right at your doorstep? Well, Instacart gives you unlimited grocery delivery for one low monthly fee. And if I can avoid buying non-keto-friendly items from supermarkets who psychs you into buying unhealthy foods, plus if it saves me a lot of time and money, sign me up. Instacart is hand-selected by shoppers based on your preferences, so no more rock-hard avocados, and they will keep your eggs safe too. And Instacart will find everything you usually buy and get smart suggestions for new items. And you can get your first order today delivered for free when you purchase over $35 by following the link on the show notes below to let Instacart know that I sent you and to help to support the show. Instacart, never step foot in the grocery store again. That's the passion that we're talking about, right? That's the passion, and you won't get there without your experience, without your passion. Because before we get into these discussions, I can't imagine how difficult it was implementing that low carb protocol, since it goes against your traditional studies, training as a medical doctor. And I'm curious about like the hurdles you encountered and how you navigate these, because it's still going against that low carb protocol. It goes against to everything that you've come to know, right?
Well, yes and no. All the guidelines say eat more grains, eat more fruits, right? Which is basically not helpful, right? But if you look at the head-to-head studies, low carb always does better. So it was very easy for me to pick it. It was like, okay, if this was an antibiotic, which antibiotic would I pick? I'd look at the guidelines and see what they say, and then I'd go look at the studies and see if it matches up. So I went to the studies, and low carb always did better. So it was quite easy for me to do it because I went to the literature. I didn't just trust the guideline. I went to the primary literature. So yeah, it was very easy for me to start the diet, because also I'm a physician. Like I'm trained into understanding guidelines and being able to read some basic literature, right? And I understand easily how to debunk like common misconceptions, like keto is going to ruin your kidney, or protein is going to kill your kidney, or something stupid, or it's bad for heart health.
I want to talk about that later.
I mean, these are just not...
Man,
it was easy for me.
We're lucky today to have somebody with your credentials, man, because like you said, and I believe it's true, because not a lot of medical practices can say that they lost 150 pounds and has all your credentials. I mean, that's why we are lucky to have Dr. Cho today to answer some of these questions, because I have a lot of questions for you, actually.
Yeah, hit me.
And we align with these things because I'm frustrated, right? Just because I see my mom and my dad, they're both mom's pre-diabetic, dad's full on, and they are just the conventional medicine, conventional practices just hinder them from making that change. So let's start with just conventional practice. I want to get your perspective on this as somebody who, you know, we're actually you giving the advice, and this is absolutely before your transformation, right? So I want to ask for your patients, right? When they follow the conventional way of calorie restriction and increased physical activity, in and out, calories in and out, when you contemplate on this, in your opinion, why was that such a disaster? Why is eat less, exercise more, all of that jazz just doesn't work for some people?
I mean, that's a very long answer. So I don't know how much you want to go into it, but fundamentally, most people coming to me know what to eat.
Right.
Right. But you ask them, what's a healthy plate? And they say vegetables and protein. Right. So they know what to eat. Right. But they have a hard time doing it. Right. They have a hard time implementing it. So, focusing on calories, it's like saying pump more air in your tire than you let out. It's a true statement. If you get a flat tire, what do you want?
Right.
You want to have more air in your tire than you let out. It's a true statement. But does it help anybody? No. Right? If you have a problem with your bank account, right? Is it a true statement to say make more money than you spend?
Mm-hmm.
It's true.
That's true.
But does that help anybody?
That's true.
No. Right. So when you're looking at nutrition, there's a metabolism problem, right? There's a potentially the biopsychosocial problem. Okay. Metabolics, psychology, all of this human behavior, all intertwine, in one, mm-hmm. encompassing sleep, movement, mm-hmm. dietary choices, right? So he's telling somebody to count their calories and eat less, eat more than they expend. Is that helping anybody? No, not really. And this idea of budgeting calories, like, yeah, it's all about calories. While it's true, it's very complicated. Because if you eat low carb and you have higher protein, all of a sudden you can eat more calories, mm-hmm. right? You can actually eat more. If you're increasing your protein and decreasing your carbohydrates and you're keeping fat fairly high, what happens? You spontaneously increase your metabolism by 200 calories a day. Mm-hmm. If you replace carb calories for protein calories, for every 400 calories you're eating that you swap, you can have 100 more calories of protein, mm-hmm. right? So the problem is that the metrics when it comes to calories, they're moving. The lower the carbs go, the more the metabolic adaption, the metabolic advantage sort of improves, the energy expenditure mm-hmm. increases. The higher the protein goes and the lower the carbs go, you not only get that energy expenditure benefit, but you also get the benefit from thermogenesis. And on top of all of that, you get the hormonal benefits of being low carb and eating fat, which means your hunger hormones stay low. Your satiety hormones go high. Your GLP-1 hormone goes high, which everybody wants now. Your endogenous hormones increase and improve. So the calorie model is just a shitty model for managing weight. Mm-hmm. It doesn't help. What do you do if you want a flat tire? Mm-hmm. You want to have a little meter on your car that says the air pressure is low, right? You want to have a service to call when you need help, right? You want to maybe have a jack and a lug nut wrench to be able to mm-hmm. change the tire, right? And it's you don't want somebody to tell you, you need more air in your tire than you let out, and wag their finger, right? Or an app to tell you, wagging your finger, like, hey, you need more air in your tire than you let out. Mm. That doesn't help. Right? What do you want? You want a service to call that's going to help you. You want a real-time assessment of the tire pressure. You want to have the tools needed embedded in your life so you can manage the issues you're facing. Right? Fix a flat or whatever. So I think medicine can just ditch, and nutrition can just ditch the calories model. And if they ditch it, it will improve.
You did say it doesn't help people, but for some people it does work. That's why there's such a confusion, right? With the fitness industry using that model, right? And people seeing that saying, hey, why is
the fitness industry growing or decreasing?
That's a good question.
Is the fitness industry growing, and are fit people increasing or decreasing?
Right Obviously it's increasing.
The fitness industry is increasing.
No, and obesity is increasing.
And obesity is increasing, which means fit people mm-hmm. are decreasing. So mm-hmm. they are making money,
right?
And we're getting less healthy. So to say pragmatically, right, like, it works for some people. I mean, chemotherapy works for some people. But we don't give chemotherapy to everybody, right? So the problem is systemically, it doesn't work. If it worked, people would do it. How many people know about calories? 99% of people know about calories.
Exactly.
And I, the problem with the fitness industry is these people are oftentimes very low carb. They're very low carb. If you are watching fitness influencers on TikTok or whatever, if you look at what they do, they eat keto products. They eat Quest chips. They have keto bread, sugar-free condiments.
Yeah.
They are all lowering their carbohydrates all the time. Right. Okay. And they rarely eat processed foods, right? Except if they're bulking. If they're bulking, they'll eat anything.
Right.
right? They'll eat anything, right? And what do? They gain fat. But they're also experts at dieting, which means eliminating carbohydrate, processed carbohydrates, sugar from their diet, and increasing protein. They're the prototypic example, right? And only take in as much as the carbs they need to facilitate their workouts. They are experts at lowering carbohydrates. So when you say the fitness industry, well, if you look at like Sam Sulek, TNF, all these fitness influencers, right? They are low carb people, whether they like to admit it or not, not when they're bulking up, but certainly when they're cutting. So the problem is does it work? What are the good things about tracking calories? Well, it makes you have to think about what you're eating. So stopping and think. So if you look at diets that compare calorie counting to just eating less fat, calorie counting works worse than just eating less fat. And eating less fat works worse than eating low carb. So when they do head-to-head studies, so to say it works for some people, I mean, yeah, it works for some people to neurotically think about what they're eating. They may end up eating less. Maybe it's because of anxiety. Maybe it's because of self-judgment, pressure. I don't know what it is. But fundamentally, if you take a group of people and tell them, cut your calories and compare them to people who cut their fat versus compare them to people who cut their carbs, the group that will do the worst is the count your calories group. The next worst will be the low fat group. The next worst will be the low carb group. Now, does that mean that you can do it that way? Yeah, you can track your calories and what you want that way, but you know, it's going to be, I mean, you can have more carbohydrates. You can make it very hard for you in the long term.
So if you have any other underlying factors, like you talked about psychology, the most efficient way is to go low carb.
Systemically, 100%. So if you look at any of those factors, so if you have metabolic syndrome, lowering triglycerides, low carbohydrate is superior. If for weight in general, low carb is superior, right? If you look at the systemic analysis, the only thing that it would not necessarily help going low carbs is the quote unquote LDL, which may increase modestly, very minutely. So if you want to be very accurate with the qualifications, low carb is superior for weight loss. Low carb is superior for lowering triglycerides and increasing HDL and reversing metabolic syndrome. Lowering carbs is superior for blood pressure. It's been tested against the DASH diet. Low carb is superior for diabetes. It lowers blood pressure and the needs for blood pressure meds more effectively. Okay. And the bottom line is what's the trade-off? Because everything's a trade-off. It will most likely, along with increasing your good cholesterol, increase the quote unquote bad cholesterol and total cholesterol. So it's not like there is no panacea. Nobody can eat everything, right? There's always a trade-off, right? If you have carbohydrates, well, what happens? Your cholesterol goes down, total cholesterol and your good cholesterol and your bad cholesterol. What goes up? Triglycerides and your blood sugars, right? So bottom line is the calorie counting approach has failed. We have known about calories. It's been promoted. It doesn't work, right? Does that mean if somebody benefits by stopping thinking about what they're eating, writing it down and counting the calories, does that work on an individual level? For some people, yes. Right. But when you look at it over populations, it works. And in randomized controlled studies, it works less well than just telling somebody to cut out fat. And cutting out fat works less well than just cutting out carbs. Does that make sense?
Yeah, because there's a lot of underlying issues that comes with it, right? For somebody who has food addiction, sugar dependency, right? It's a lot more, you know, it becomes, so for some people from the fitness industry may call it, hey, you just got to be disciplined. You just got to be you got to moderate, right? It's all about that. But at the end of the day, not everybody can moderate, right? And it may not fit someone else's regimen, right? So what I think that what they're not understanding is that there's a lot of people who have an undiagnosed food addiction, right? An undiagnosed sugar dependency, right? So I want to talk about that and maybe the underlying issues. They talk about the root cause, right? For conventional medicine, because when you do go to your traditional doctor, right? In my experience anyway, and what I've heard, they only focus on the surface level solution, right? What are they missing? But you know, when you go to your doctor, you go to them and they just ask for your symptoms, right? They don't go any further than that. And when you say, hey, I got a headache, but why can't they just ask further than that, right? To know where the root cause is coming from. I've seen this so many times with my family members going to their doctors. They tell me, they just ask my symptoms, because I always ask them after a visit, what do they ask you? I mean, they just ask for my symptoms. They give me a pill, an antibiotic, right? And they hand those things like candy over there. But it just creates more frustration for me. And obviously, you know, I don't have the credentials like their doctor, but just frustrating, right? But what are they missing? Why are they not asking the root cause? Like if you take your dog to the vet, the first thing they ask you is what do you feed your dog, right? But when you go to your doctor, which is funny, they only ask for your symptoms. What are they missing, Dr. Tro, do you think?
I think fundamentally most doctors are lazy and don't care. Okay. I think most doctors are lazy and don't care. And actually, I think that they just don't, they don't know. They've never seen it either. A lot of them have just never seen good care. Right. I don't know if that makes sense, but they like, it's tough for me to say that they're lazy and they don't care. It's also, they have never seen it. They have never seen exceptional medical care. Right? They don't know what it looks like. Right? Nobody's ever shown them how to be exceptional. Mm-hmm. It's mainly how to be a cog in a wheel.
Yeah.
So if you look at it, right? And they also discount the ability of the person in front of them.
Right.
Right. So a doc vet, it's like, what are you feeding them? Because that's something they can improve. They view it as something they can improve. I can get this cat or dog to eat something better and maybe some of the symptoms will get better.
Right.
Right. Maybe they're being fed chocolate. Right. And, or maybe they're allergic to whatever. I don't know, whatever it is. When it comes to diet, doctors automatically say, well, people can't sustain diets. So why am I even going to bother?
Right.
Right. So they have given up before they've started. They're probably lazy and don't care, right? Because if they cared, they would try a different way, right? Or, and it may be a combination of all of these, they probably have never seen exceptional care before, right? They've never seen what it looks like to be amazing. And I think that's something that in my clinic, I've strived for. It's, I want the patient experience to be amazing. I want to make sure when people leave, you know, they're going to go review me and hit 5 stars, right?
Yeah.
I want to make sure we're doing better than the guy next to me, the guy down the street. Mm-hmm. Right. So I track how well we do and I try to improve. I want to understand the values of my patients.
Yeah.
Right. What it is they're trying to accomplish and try to help them attain the goals that they have. Mm-hmm. Because my goals for them aren't necessarily their goals. So coming back to the example where you said they're just pushing pills, right? That's usually an example of a doctor pushing their goals. Maybe they get paid more if they write certain pills. Maybe they think that a high number needs to be treated, but that's your goal. That's not the patient's like, I want to be healthy. I want to not need that pill you're writing.
Right.
So I think it's tough because docs, I think that they, I don't mean to say that they don't care. I think it's they don't care enough. They probably care. I think they're in general caring people.
Yeah.
Right. But they just don't care enough to say, well, wait a second. Taking this money from insurance is making me be a worse doctor. Or wait a second. The system is preventing me from being the best I can be. Wait a second. What are the things I need to do better? How do I implement those things into my practice so I can do better? And they've never seen it. They've never seen somebody do that, change the system, make change happen so that patient care improves. It's not done.
Yeah. I believe that they had a great point about they haven't seen it. Most of the doctors that I've come across that changed their practice is they usually have their own experience. I want to ask you, have you seen a doctor that didn't have any experience or their own health journey? They didn't have any, you know, aches and pains like that, that change like on their own?
Eric Westman definitely is one of those. I think not that a huge health experience. Yeah. My partner, who's amazing, absolutely amazing, Dr. Laura Buchanan. She didn't have this massive health journey, although she did see her blood sugars improve on the CGM, and she's seen it in her family. But she's like, more than anybody knows the value of metabolic care. Right. So I know what you mean. Like in some ways it's easier for me. Right. Because I've seen it myself. I've seen it in my family. I know the power. And you say it yourself, you see your parents suffering. And you want to do something about it. I mean, here's you are on this podcast. I bet the purpose of this podcast is really so mom and dad listen and change, right? So mom and dad, if you're listening, your son wants you to change, right? If you're a family member, you know, of Lorenz, he's doing this. So you take your health into your own hands and stop being disempowered. Stop letting your doctors put you on a lower place. Let them, if they're not raising you up, replace them, get a new one. Right. I think most doctors, it's easy for me because I felt it myself. And it's harder for other doctors who haven't had that opportunity. You're right.
It's just, my goal is to just, my ideal thing is just to have them all, that these patients have options, right? Including educating them, trying to reverse it, right? How far are we from that? Like the conventional, because I mean, that's the only way that it's going to happen is when the conventional medicine changes, right? How far are we from that, do you think? Or is it ever going to happen, in your opinion?
That's a hard question, man.
Hard question, I know. Hard question.
There's
a lot of biases, right?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a long time. I think it's going to be a long, long time.
Yeah. Yeah. With biases and just agendas. You really have to go back to history to really explain to people why red meat, fat has been vilified like that, right? You can't explain it without explaining history and where it started. It's really hard to explain because it's so ingrained in our beliefs, right? And it's really hard to that's why I want to ask you, like, there are a lot of factors with lifestyle. I get it, it's not easy, especially with undiagnosed food addiction, right? Plus the traditional way of treating them makes it impossible for a person to overcome. How would you address this situation with the patient, though? How do you learn about a patient's history about sugar dependency? Because again, some might not be aware that they may have them. Like if somebody comes into your office, want to lose weight, but doesn't know they have this dependency, obviously they have this preconceived idea of dieting, right? But comes to your office, how do you make them aware that they have it or in any situation?
Yeah, I think it's getting them to start to understand. I think you have to have a deep understanding of what addiction is. And I think you need to understand how it affects basic human traits, how it affects human emotions, how it affects human logic, how it affects reasoning. an outlook and self, how you advocate for yourself and how you blame, you know, self-blame. Mm-hmm. So if a provider understands those things, then they can help a patient understand their human experience with that substance. If they fundamentally don't have insight into what is addiction, like what does that mean, right? I mean, it's not just you keep using something despite self-harm. It's more than that. It's the emotional responses you have. It's the psychological, the shame and the guilt, the way that you change your behavior, hide and sneak, lose control, use it only in private. If a person doesn't understand that, if a provider doesn't understand it, I think it's very hard to explain it to a patient. Right? If they don't have insight into what is the human experience of addiction, how are they going to help build that insight into a patient? So I think fundamentally, you know, there's some screens that can help. There's screening tools that can help. And we use them in our clinic. But I think fundamentally it's that, again, biopsychosocial, connecting with somebody and helping them understand. And a lot of times I use my own struggle, my own emotional responses from that, from a dark period of my life, my own logic and reasoning from a dark period of my life, and my own, the way I didn't advocate for myself and the high degree of self-blame I had, right? How I, by using myself as an example and letting my patients relate to it, I think I'm able to, one, make them not feel alone, right, in their struggle, right, and then begin to understand that this thing that they're fighting against has a way that it affects them, a very systematic way that it manipulates, has a manipulation in their life. Mm-hmm. And this is a really metaphysical sort of conversation, but at its base level, we just help them understand what food addiction is. And we even built it into our app. You know, our app, the Dr. Tro app, has has a area devoted to relationship to food. So yeah,
awesome. We'll link it down in the description box below so you guys can check that out. Yeah, I want to ask you about coaching, Dr. Tro. You've mentioned your focus on just intensive lifestyle changes, right? Patients, encompassing diet, exercise, all of that. How do you approach guiding individuals through all these facets of changes? Because again, how do you steer them into that way of low carb eating too? Like, how do you, because are they aware that they're coming into your office?
People know what they're getting before they, so it is very clear what we do. Mm-hmm. And my staff makes it very clear what we do, what we are. We're a food first organization. We are trying to get patients off drugs. We are low carb supportive. And so when a patient signs up with us, they know what they're going to get.
All right.
So a lot of times if somebody's not ready for change, they're not coming to us. Mm-hmm. Right. So a big part of coaching, which I'm sure you know, is assessing readiness to change. If somebody's not ready, they're not signing up with us. Right. So if they're not ready, they're going and seeing their doctors and just following us on social media, listening to our podcast, using our app. And when they're ready, they're calling us. Right. So a lot of what we do in terms of we're getting them before they ever walk in. Now that's it. Where they're pre-contemplative before they walk in. They're contemplative when they sign up and we're already on our way. We're already on our way. Right. And the minute they sign up, they have a whole curriculum. Here's what you need to do to get started. So they went from pre-contemplative before they signed up to contemplative when they signed up. And now they're ready. They're getting the information needed to execute action. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's an art that's taken years to understand. Like I said, we have an amazing team and we do this every day for a living, which is awesome. We get to see people reverse disease, reverse Cushing's, reverse diabetes, reverse obesity, reverse blood pressure issues on a daily basis. So it's awesome.
That's what people need to understand. These are all lifestyle intervention. You can reverse most of these chronic illnesses. That's what we want to, just the message just simple message that I want to tell people. But yeah, you talked about your health coaches, and you have, they all have experienced a health struggle and then significant weight loss themselves, right? How does having a team with personal weight loss journeys contribute to the support and understanding that you can offer to these patients?
Yeah, I think everybody has their own journey, you know, whether it's a mental health journey, a physical journey, a journey against the medical system, a journey towards optimal health. And those are the people that we really like to hire, you know, people who've had those journeys. And those are the people we like to work with, because that, again, it comes down to that human experience. You have to be able to relate to people if you're going to expect wild results. We can't just tell people eat less and move more and expect wild results. It didn't work. It hasn't worked, right? We can't just tell people anymore, hey, count your calories, right? Because it's not working. So if we intend to have amazing results, we have to be able to do more. And part of that is being able to relate to people. And people who have struggled are in a great place to sort of relate to people.
Yeah. Personal.
Yeah.
To them, it's personal. They know how to navigate the intricacies of just how to navigate the world, right? Obviously, the society that we live in now, it doesn't operate to their advantage, right? Obviously, you know, you walk into a grocery store, what do you see? There's a lot of box items and what I call them fake foods too, right?
Yeah.
Which is, it's, if you're somebody on a health journey, it makes it difficult for you to overcome, right? But with a support coming from somebody who has really gone through the struggles, it really helps somebody and it gives them hope, right? What you're doing, everybody in your team has had that experience where whatever it is, you can help this patient, right? So amazing, amazing work that you guys are doing. I really appreciate you coming on, sir, sharing your story here with us. You had such amazing message to, you know, I love your passion, man, on social media and all of that jazz. And you've done well so far, sir. So I'm a fan of you and a fan of your practice, and hopefully we can you know, connect one more time.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. You know how to contact our whole team now. It's nice connecting with you, Lawrence. Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And to everyone who wants to listen to the Low Carb MD podcast, you can. I'm going to link it down in the description box below. To everyone who wants to connect to Dr. Tro, it's linked in the description box below, so you guys can check that out. Dr. Tro, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to another great episode here on the Ketones and Coffee podcast. And we've had such a pleasure of hosting yet another amazing guest here, guys. If you're eager to learn more about the secrets of succeeding on the ketogenic lifestyle, be sure to check out the show notes. As a special treat for our loyal listeners, I'm offering an exclusive opportunity for a free consultation call. Discover how you can achieve success on the ketogenic lifestyle by simply referring to the details provided in the show notes. Take advantage, guys, of this unique chance to enhance your journey to a healthier you. And stay tuned for more captivating episodes. And until next time, guys, keep embracing the power of ketones.